This episode of Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation is brought to you in part by Clay Boykin Life and Business Coaching, because we all get stuck at times. For more information, visit clayboykin.com. By Janelle Bean, for fun and engaging children's books with cute and colorful characters. For more information, visit janellebean.com. And by Wise Owl Organizing, simply set up for you. Organizing consulting and clarity coaching, virtual or in person. For more information, visit wiseowlorganizing.com.
Hello, world. It's me, Dennis. Welcome to A Reasonably Spontaneous Conversation, part two with Rick Pagano. Hello, Rick.
Hello, Dennis. How are you?
Oh, I'm well, thank you. Listen, I'm so much better in the sense that I have actually gotten a chance to see 10 Tricks since the last time we talked. So I'm much better prepared to be able to do that. Congratulations on the film.
Thank you.
Congratulations. It's coming out on the 27th. First of all, what I'd like to do is for anyone who hasn't seen it or who hasn't seen episode one of our conversation, here is the trailer.
This is my last trick. Watch carefully. When I'm done, I'll tell you how it works.
When you undress a woman with your eyes, that's just half the story.
You don't happen to have any mouthwash? Never mind.
Because once a woman says yes, and we do more often than you think.
So what can I do for you?
It's a woman who sooner or later sees a man naked.
It's $300 for the hour.
Good Lord, it's more than my facial.
All the dumb things men do to get laid, like talking.
How much you usually cost anyway?
You want to be sexy?
Come on, fuck with them!
Don't get me wrong. Getting laid is what makes the world go round. It's an absolute necessity for my business. Somehow I expected a little romance in the deal.
Ooh, boy, we talking champagne for everybody. Yeah, big old payday.
I just wonder.
What would you wonder?
What it would have been like for us.
Funny thing is, not the sex you come here for, is it? Something else. Happiest place on earth, isn't it, Dave? Disneyland's got nothing on us.
Rick, this was your first time at the actual helm of a feature film?
Yes.
How did you prepare mentally for that? Just thinking, because you've done so much in the film world, and you've participated as a producer, as in casting, you've written, you've done so much, but now you're going to be directing and at the helm. So how did you mentally get ready for that?
Well, first we had to come up with the idea that I had to revamp the idea from the play,
yeah,
which was that the entire play took place in a fairly small theater. It was only about 20 by 20. The stage was only about 20 feet by 20 feet. So suddenly I had to expand my vision of how this might be portrayed and where we might be able to shoot it. And luckily at the time I was living in a fairly large house on Hollywood Boulevard, which allowed it. I think we had 5 or 6 bedrooms and a very large space. And we had a lot of room to be able to move and expand the vision of the movie. So that helped a lot.
Wow, I can imagine. And yeah. And so, but then you still have to get prepared for it to be able to say, okay, well, I'm going to sit in the captain's chair. This is going to be my ship. So talk about that process.
Well, I had to talk to John Bailey a lot about how he wanted to shoot it, because John, my legendary cinematographer, really wanted to experiment with some very small cameras. At the time, they were the technology, was not rudimentary, but when we were working on it, he really wanted to experiment with these fairly small cameras that were very mobile. And so he wanted to be able to shoot with 2 cameras. And I said, that was great. I knew how I wanted to set up certain master shots And I knew that I wanted to make sure that I got in close on people, because a lot of what worked for me was their dynamic of really seeing these people up close and what each character is going through. But I also wanted to know that there were moments when the dynamic of comedy plays in. And I had learned from reading that, you know, the dynamic of comedy is very important. It's very important to see two people and how they interact with each other. So I had to balance how many two shots I wanted with how much close up I wanted.
Did you storyboard it all out? Did you work from that process? How is it for those of us who have done this or would like to do this? How did you work?
Well, I did some sketching of things, but I'm not a great artist. I'm left-handed, and the nuns made me write with my right hand. And so I've always felt insecure about drawing, to be honest. So I had to sort of sketch out each scene in terms of how I saw it, but I couldn't actually do a storyboard for myself. And also, we were working fairly quickly, so I didn't have time to do a whole storyboard. I didn't have months and months between the time that we actually closed the play and when we actually got to do the initial start shooting the movie. But I was able to visualize by going through each room, since I had the good fortune to live in the house where I was planning to shoot. I did have that notion in mind. And then when the limousine became available, I had to think about a really interesting way to do that, because again, one of the issues of the play was that we had several characters being played by only four men. The idea being that the characters are sorts of everyman, a sort of everyman character. And so when we got the limousine available to us, I came up with the idea of shooting the entire scene just using the rearview mirror. So
which
that you only
was
shot.
So wonderful. Oh God, that was gorgeous.
Yeah. And of course that character, that actor who plays that guy, also ends up playing the guy at the end, Keith, the sheriff, the policeman who comes in.
Yep.
And wishes Grace a happy birthday. But you wouldn't know it because you don't ever see his face.
No, and you don't. And but still the characters, it does bring me that's where that everyman I love using the theme, because while you're using the theme of sex in a whorehouse that we have in a bordello that men are coming through, it isn't the sex act that is the key. It is their journey. It's the journey, the particular place where I find them along the way that moved me.
The way I feel is that most people reveal themselves in their most intimate moments. And sexuality is certainly one of the places where we all reveal our vulnerabilities and our authenticity, if you will. And so for me, it was about trying to find each character's moment of authenticity, each character's moment of vulnerability. Just as it is for the magician trying to find his authenticity. It's all about, I think the whole movie is really about people finding their authenticity through the act of magic and through the act of sex.
Right. And they had one of the things that I found interesting that all of the characters, as they're meeting and as they're connecting, they're really seeing themselves and they're really getting a chance to have the reflection in one another and trying to be open about that.
That's a good point.
It's an extraordinary piece. How did you, as a director? Okay, so you're approaching this, and I found it interesting without having as a spoiler alert, but it felt like that the very last scene was meta. It was almost as if this was your conversation that you were having with the actors before the scene, as they had that, or as a director would have that.
Do you mean the director scene, or?
Yes, the director scene at the end.
The director scene was actually in the play, and in the play, the vignettes were more separated from one another.
Yes.
And it just seemed to me, we loved it. We had so much fun doing the director's scene and we didn't want to lose it. So we shot it and I couldn't quite figure out where to put it when we came to editing the film. And my editor and I, Jackie Cambus, Jackie and I looked at it one day and said, well, what if we put it in the end credits? We tried it and we really liked it. So it may be a moment of meta, but it was also a moment of practicality, which was that didn't really fit anywhere else. And we had too much fun not to leave it in. So that's what we did.
Ah, the world of happy accidents.
Yeah, it is. It was an accident. And that's a fun accident. And
well, isn't that where the magic comes in, right?
Yes, well,
all
exactly.
Right, so Rick, when you go ahead and I was stunned by the quality of the acting. I mean, there is some subtlety in these actors that you got. How much rehearsal time did you get and to be able to get them to do? Because you brought out of them just some really powerful work.
Thank you. Well, you know, we did have the time to rehearse for 5 weeks. And actually, even more than that, we were workshopping it for a while. And I was rewriting the stuff, rewriting it, putting it all together. So we worked for several months on putting the play together. By the time the play closed, these actors were really pretty familiar with their characters. And they were able to really do the kind of exploration that you can only do in the theater, for the most part, unless you have an enormous budget to do a lot of rehearsal before you start shooting a movie.
Sure.
Also, when it came to blocking and, you know, during what we did was we took a holiday vacation, and I did a lot of blocking of the individual scenes in the house during that vacation period. And that allowed us to do a little bit more exploring with how movement, how where they are in the room and where they are emotionally could be combined. So
that is it was so powerful for me. Did you as a director find that in the Me Too world and this, when you're having to do nudity within, how do you deal with that? And how is it different than it was back a few years ago?
Well, you know, it has changed enormously. And we have to obviously be very careful, but I've, as a casting director, I've had to deal with that issue of nudity in the past. And you have to be very sensitive. You have to make sure you're never the only person in the room. I've always been that way in my auditions, and I've also always been that way when I'm dealing with children. I think it's really important to have a second person in the room because of the sensitivities,
yes.
Whether it's a parent or whether it's a casting associate or a casting assistant. So we had to make sure that they were comfortable with it. Now, my original cast, when we did the play, there was actually no nudity in the play, although three of the actresses were totally fine with it. They said they would have been fine to do it. I'm actually more prudish than my actresses were. Mm-hmm. And so I pretty much kept it what I thought was as subtle as I could possibly be. In fact, I would say that if there was any disagreement that John and I had, that John felt that there should be more sexuality in the movie than I did. It might be my Catholic upbringing, but I just felt that it was important to express enough sexuality that you didn't need to, you know, there are too many times when you see scenes where people are having sex and then they've got all their clothes on and it's just not realistic. So at some point, some clothes have to come off.
Yes. And you know, I think about that in our society that on network television you can show an execution, but you can't show a naked breast.
Right.
What does that say about us?
It's pretty hypocritical, but it's true generally in America. It's not as true in Europe.
Right.
And it's much more. They're much more free in their comfort with their bodies.
Exactly. It's just comfort with our bodies. That's all we're doing. So.
Yeah, it really is.
So what did you learn about yourself and the craft of directing during this process? I mean, this is a passion project for you, as your wife so beautifully pointed out, to say, let's show us your passion, show us what you have, which is what I wanted to say, which I so
sure.
wanted to see. So what did you learn about yourself and the craft of directing and directing in the motion picture or television world during this? Tell me some of the lessons that you got.
I would say I can start with two. There may be more, but I know I could identify sure. two of them right off the bat. One of them is to know not to talk too much. That very often an actor is ready to go, and you have to really be sensitive to when they're ready. So if we're shooting and the first take doesn't work and I need to give a note, I have to make sure I give a note And at a certain point, I'm going to see it sometimes in the eyes of the actor. Sometimes the actor will say, I got it, let's shoot. But a lot of times it's just in the eyes of the actor and you have to go, okay, enough, I've spoken enough, I don't need to say any more, let's shoot it. That's one thing. I also had learned that, I think, doing theater, which is that if you spend all your time talking, you don't really spend any time running the scenes. The other thing I learned is that I think when you're the host of a party, and I sometimes, when I teach actors, I talk about the importance of being the host of the party. When you're the host of the party, you set the tone, you set the mood. And as the director, you have to walk onto the set every day, every moment, being the guy who sets the mood. And it has to be a mood of playfulness, needs to be a mood where openness and creativity, where people are having fun and also being allowed to experiment and try things. So I think that those are the two big lessons I learned from directing the movie.
How did you, were there times when an actor would say something that wasn't on the page, but you just went, yes, and that was there, or they had a reaction that wasn't quite there? How, because I hear of the different forms of directing that some will say the word is, especially since you wrote the thing, the word is absolutely what I needed to hear, or I'm going to let you and leave that in. How did that work?
My actors were very disciplined in what they learned. They had memorized their lines during the run of the play, mm-hmm. except for Leah Thompson, who came in again, mm-hmm. came in only for the movie, and Beth Skip, and I think Paul Swetland was also new. But yes, everyone had to, pretty much, they were already pretty much familiar with their lines.
Yeah. So, all right. And so now you had your, getting a chance to have this go out. How are you dealing with the as the critics come in and you're beginning to read the reviews? You know that scene that we all see on you know, the Broadway opening, and everyone's waiting for the newspapers to come in. And this, well, now of course we're coming in on the internet. But how are you dealing with the review process?
Well, so far the reviews have been good. A friend of mine, a fellow director friend of mine, used to say that he doesn't read the reviews because he doesn't believe the good ones and he wished he hadn't read the bad ones. And, you know, I've had a lot of reviews because I've directed 10 of my own plays and I've directed other people's plays. Mm-hmm. And I've gotten good, really good reviews, and I've also gotten some weak reviews. And you just have to roll with it and try to, you know, read it. See if there's a note, if the review is critical in some way, try to see if that's if there's something valid in it. Mm-hmm. But there are always going to be opinions. Everyone's got an opinion, and some of the opinions are worth listening to, and others are, you know, perhaps less valuable.
Yeah. And so now that the film is going to be going out, are you staying in contact with the cast and connecting with them and saying, look what we're doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yes, I've let everybody know what's going on. I've shown them the trailer. I've, you know, when Cinedigm gets the movie out on DVD, I'm going to send everybody a DVD, obviously. And some of the actors are people that I talk, that I'm still friends with, and I talk to on a regular basis. And so I've stayed in touch with pretty much, you know, with most of the cast.
All right. So does this experience being a director and directing the film make you want to do another direction, do less direction? What's your sense about that right now, Rick?
Well, I'm trying to, you know, I'm trying to get to, I think I mentioned this maybe in our other mm-hmm. interview, but there are two films that I would love to get off the ground. Both were actually earlier plays of mine that people have encouraged me to turn into screenplays. Mm-hmm. And in each case, I had producers who wanted to put money behind them, but for one reason or another, it never quite got off the ground. One of the reasons was I was considered a first-time director and they needed a big star to get it done. And uh-huh. so in every situation I would get, well, we like the script, but the actors, we would make offers to actors and we like the script, but we're not sure that, you know, a first-time director, that Michael Douglas wants to work with a first-time director, or Al Pacino wants to work with a first-time director. But sure. I do have some projects that are really close to my heart. One's called My Italian Cafe, about a magical cafe where if you sit and drink your coffee, when you leave, your perfect lover appears in the door and they're always Italian American. And it's about revitalizing a town that's on the verge of being being torn down in the middle of the recession. And the other one is called Hanging Alice, and that's set in the South in the middle of the Civil Rights Movement in August of 1963, right around the time that Martin Luther King was giving his I Have a Dream speech and his March on Birmingham. And it's about a young teacher who, and a young African-American teacher who's teaching in a Southern town, and she defends an elephant that's about to be hanged for going on a rampage. They're both comedies, and I think that's where I feel my wheelhouse is in comedy.
I agree. The thing that I love about your comedy is that it isn't a mean comedy. It comes out of the situation. There is a streak of idealism in you is coming. Where does that come from?
That's a very good question. I don't know. I'm not sure. I'd have to think about that.
Think about that. And as you go to your psychiatrist and lean down and go, I had this question about my idealism.
I'm not cynical about the human race. I can be cynical about individual people sometimes,
exactly.
But I'm optimistic about the human race.
So am I. I can't look at children today and I look at their faces and I can go, yeah, okay, it's going to be okay. Because there is so much going on. It feels like that we're like at an evolutionary stage. We're like, I don't know how it happened when we evolved from the chimpanzee bonobo line into the Homo habilis. I don't know what was the imperative there, but it feels to me like something is happening. An elevation in consciousness is happening in the world. Something positive has been let loose. You wouldn't know it by the news because they don't make their money that way, but something very positive is going on.
I certainly hope so. I hope you're right.
Well, it is a pleasure to talk, Rick, and I want to not only to congratulate you, but I look forward to getting an opportunity to be able to see the things that you're going to do. We're in our opportunities as veterans in this business is really to be able to contribute. We can contribute in ways that we never have before. And I admire you so much for the film.
Thank you so much. And
I look forward to getting a chance to talk with you at another time.
Yes, go see 10 Tricks. It'll be available September 27th on Fandor and Amazon Prime and multiple platforms.
Thank you. And I so appreciate you coming and putting that in there, because that is the key to what we're doing. All right. Thank you, Rick, and we'll see you again.
Thanks, Dennis. Take care.
This episode of Reasonably Spontaneous Conversations has been brought to you in part by In Search of the New Compassionate Male. For more information, go to newcompassionatemale.com.